Mini-episode 962 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge number 962, mini-episode. This is Rick Morris here, your FDH managing partner, with our good friend and fellow FDH Lounge dignitary, Lloyd Carroll, welcoming him back to the program. Lloyd has been on with us many times over the years, talking any number of subjects, because whether it be from handling taxes, which he is perfectly licensed to do as a CPA, whether it's sports writing, places like Queen's Chronicle, other fine publications that he writes for. Lloyd is an all-around kind of a guy here, but in getting him on at this point in time, if you read his columns on a regular basis, you know that one of the things that always kind of fascinates him is anything from a sports business standpoint, I should say. And maybe that's the CPA and him coming out and seeing the money there and what's this going to equate to in terms of dollars. So this is a great time. There's a lot of great sports headlines out there. Pick his brain on it, see what he thinks is going on. Lloyd, it is always great to have you on the program. Welcome back on, my friend.
Good to be back. It's been too long. Great hearing your voice, and I always love when you always say, nothing's off the table. I think we're going to prove that tonight.
I think we are. I think we absolutely are. And, again, there are a great many things to get to, and I know that you are always fascinated in your columns there on different things that if you think that something is going to pop the ratings, or, you know, the leagues and networks are going to love if this combination comes together. Well, on something like the Olympics, that's not something that can be controlled as much, particularly the Winter Olympics. They're not really a very star-driven kind of a narrative. Some of the bigger stars out there, Shaun White, Lindsey Vonn, we don't think about them, quite frankly, much in the other 4 years, much less the curling stars, as much as I love watching curling. But this was one where the ratings were down a piece. I believe the lowest-rated Winter Olympics, the last I saw, in terms of the ratings that had come in. So, again, we've got this world where everything continues to decline. Ratings everywhere are sort of ebbing off of what their peak were. There's competition from streaming services on top of everything else, prestige cable networks, et cetera, et cetera. So what do you make of something like this? NBC with their PR, they're obviously out there playing up the positives, and look at how many people did watch, and look at how many people were engaged on social media about it. Look at how many people dot, dot, dot. So which side of the equation do you kind of come down on as far as success or failure for NBC coming off of this?
Well, you know, again, this could be, and you just kind of alluded to it, the classic half full, half empty, and you can make argument from both sides on this. To be fair to NBC, I got a press release from CBS where they proudly said, CBS wins the silver medal for non-Olympic programming. They had a sense of humor about it, but the point being that even they were conceding and happy to get anywhere close just leading the non-Olympics. So even though ratings are down, it still was the driver for prime time. I think the real key for NBC is going to be a lot of the shows that they're debuting now, and one that I actually have a soft spot for, I don't think it'll do well, but AT Bio, that I think it's a great show, but that's where you're going to see some return on investment. If AP Bio is a hit, there's another one called Bad Girls, which I didn't catch yet. It debuted, I think, on Monday. If those shows pop, then you know what? NBC won, you got what they needed. Now, keep in mind, I remember chatting with Mike Tirico about this. They knew going in this was going to be a rough slog because they didn't have the NHL players. And that's a major driver. And they try to make it sound like, well, we can come up with new stars. I mean, it's not the best spin possible, but the U.S. men's team didn't do anything.
Right.
They were lucky that the women won, finally beat Canada after all these years, but that's exactly what's going to create the Al Michaels moment there of, do you believe in miracles?
That's a very good point.
Yeah, and that kind of, and if you're going to win a gold medal in curling, curling, that kind of, in a sense, is kind of a gag gold medal. Listen, I don't mean a gold medal's a gold medal, but you kind of get the idea. That's not going to exactly get the Sports Illustrated covers or the Wheaties box.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And, yeah, again, AP Bio, given that we in the FDH Lounge recently posted an 11-part ranking of every episode of Sunny, top to bottom, of course, anything with, Glenn Howerton in it is something, that particularly playing essentially the same character that he plays on Sunny. That's a great thing, I think, to watch. The thing about the NHL I wanted to get into with you, and I know that, again, the time zone differential, when the games are going to be played, that played into this as well, but I have been pretty strong in bashing the NHL for this decision because I've always felt like it's one of these penny-wise, pound-foolish kind of things. They don't directly monetize the Olympics. It's true. But it's one of these things where, and I think you living in the New York area is not so different than me living in flyover country because we really only have a couple areas in this country that are that strong into hockey. Detroit, Minnesota, Boston, that's most of them. I have friends, Lloyd, that every 4 years talk to me about hockey, or I saw this TJ Oshie guy score the winning goal against the Russians. These friends don't talk to me about hockey the rest of the 4 years, but they know I'm a hockey guy, and it's on their minds, and they're excited by watching the NHL guys. To me, you're admitting your own incompetence as a league if you can't find a way to monetize that and take advantage of that moment in time every 4 years.
Well, there's no question. There is incompetence. I asked Gary Bettman about it. Are you in the NBC Sports executive still on speaking terms? And, I mean, because, again, you have to keep something in mind here. The NBC is the NHL's main broadcast partner.
Awkward.
And, you know, here NBC is making this billion-dollar investment in the Winter Olympics. So you would think the NHL, even if they didn't really want to lose the 2 weeks, even if they couldn't see how they monetize it, just to keep your loyal television partner happy, you would think they would do that.
Right. Would think so.
You would think so, but you'd be wrong. And I forgot who the NBC, I'm trying to blank here, Mark, I forgot his last name, the president of NBC Sports, but clearly he could not have been happy about this. I mean, you know, without NBC, ESPN couldn't care less about hockey. He proved it. If those rights came up for bidding, you would have, you know, I'm sure somebody would bid on it, but it wouldn't be very much. It doesn't, as you said, it doesn't pop. And they worked themselves out. It's a very great sport, great players, a very insular culture on the team executive level, as I can vouch for being here in New York.
Yeah, and it's one of these things where, again, I think it's one of the greatest sports tournaments that there is, if not the greatest one. Oh, the Olympic hockey tournament is so freaking awesome. The last several Olympics, I would always take off work the Wednesday of the quarterfinals and just veg out and watch 12 hours of hockey. It's one of the greatest things ever, watching the elimination games all play out there. And it's one of these things where, and I've had a little back and forth, I've had a disagreement on this with fellow FDH Lounge dignitary and Sportsology proprietor Russ Cohen, who says, but Rick, the World Cup of Hockey, oh, they don't need the Olympics. And I say to him, Russ, with all due respect, buddy, you're in the hockey bubble. You know, if you're surrounded by people that are in hockey and you're in hockey media and everything like that, I get where you think that. Drive out the flyover country. I loved the World Cup of Hockey when it happened, but number one, it doesn't happen on a regular, predictable basis, and number two, none of my friends talked to me about the World Cup of Hockey when it was going on. I don't think there was
cachet.
Yeah.
It was the same with the World Cup of Basketball. They tried that. They're the Olympics, and everything else is a wannabe. You know, it's like the Grammy Awards versus the American Music Awards versus everybody else.
Right.
You know, there's still a cachet.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's basically, you know, the Kleenex thing, right? Kleenex has become the brand name. I mean, that's sort of what it is that the Olympic hockey tournament is the end-all and be-all for international hockey. And you look at that, and again, that certainly played into NBC's ratings issues, as well as, again, you were always going to have a certain amount of it being halfway around the world, ratings, people are getting spoilers on what happened for the different events. There are some things that are maybe a little bit easier to understand there than perhaps the entity that has been the big daddy in American TV sports, I'd say the last 20 or 30 years, the NFL. And there's some real wondering, I think, going on at this moment in time here, that when we got to 2015, 2016, did we maybe reach, you know, we keep hearing about peak oil in terms of economics. You almost have to start to wonder, have we reached peak NFL? Because you look at the way the ratings have gone the last 2 years, and people are turned off by the flag kneeling, but there's also the concussion issues and all the things like that. There's thought that the talent pool, we won't know till we get into the 2020s, but you know, people may not be playing football in as great of a numbers. And it's really interesting to kind of look at this and extrapolate, you know, where we're at in this moment of time, how much that has to do with it, and whether ratings might spike up again next year, or whether this is a trend.
I think the NFL's obituary is premature here. I mean, first of all, I think if you have to point to one thing, I don't even point to kneeling. I always thought the Thursday night package, you know, we're just putting too much supply and the demand has been saturated. You know, you've got, and the games themselves weren't that good. That's the problem. You know, that for some reason, also the American fans are used to Monday night being the big night, and that's kind of been diminished because of ESPN, and now the Sunday night NBC game is the marquee game. So there's always that Thursday night package. Just has not really caught on. Even the broadcasters don't want to do it. It's just the players don't want to play in it. And, you know, given that, yet Fox bid and got a good, I guess when the NFL said, let's get while we get this good, got a very lucrative 5-year deal out of it. And I guess Fox figures they don't have any programming at 10 o'clock on Thursday nights, or any night for that matter. So, yeah, if they go a little long, you're great. They're not giving up that much real estate, per se. Yeah, generally the World Series doesn't play on Thursday night anyway, so that's, you know, they can work around that. So, yeah, I wouldn't, you know, I understand why people are, you know, getting a little fed up with the NFL. I'm not writing that one yet.
And I can understand that if it's premature, but it's one of these things where I remember sort of bristling at this, you know, maybe about 3 years or so ago. Remember, it was the year that the NFL moved the draft to May, and there were logistical reasons for that. Wasn't it something that they couldn't get the Javits Center at the right time?
That is correct. Yeah, I remember there was something with Radio City. That is correct, yeah.
They
had spring spectacular. That's one of the reasons that the draft is not in New York anymore. They just got tired of dealing with Dolan and Radio City.
Well, and it's become a very lucrative road show, and it's like they're gonna have it at Jerry World this year. Without question, the Cleveland/Canton thing is going to happen either next year or the year after, because they want to milk the centennial of the league, and they've built this big Hall of Fame village there. So the NFL is not going to miss a chance to kind of hype that. And, you know, they've found a way to monetize that. But I remember bristling at it that when they moved to May, Goodell seemed to kind of be a little bit cocky. Like, we're going to occupy every month of the year on the calendar. We're going to be something to be reckoned with. And I'm sitting here going, from my own personal standpoint, how can we miss you if you never go away? And I wonder if they just didn't get a little bit full of themselves at that point in time, so much intent on conquering the world. You're damn well going to talk about us every month of the year. Well, that leads to fatigue. And maybe I'm overthinking this, but I wonder if that hasn't played into it as well.
Well, it certainly does, but I'm going to say the NFL here. They have now an NFL TV network. So every network, every sport now, if you want to make an argument, is a 12-month-a-year sport just because they have to create content for their own networks.
Right. And that's, although, again, my biggest complaint with that is they don't show nearly enough classic stuff for my liking. If they showed old games and, you know, classic stuff like that in the off season, I mean, I'd much prefer that to just drivel and analysis about this, that, and the other. A couple shows are fine. I don't know if they need as much of it as they end up doing. Again, my personal, you know, standpoint there in terms of looking at it. But, yeah, it's very interesting to see where they sit on the landscape and where they are. And one of the things about Thursday nights as well is they've been a little bit of a sort of a canary in the coal chamber as far as new media rights and where we're going with that. And as things are going to go, as we get the ultimate convergence, our friend Simon Applebaum broadcasts about this all the time, of TV and technology. The NFL, the last couple of years, they've been making money off of the streaming rights for Thursday night games, and that continues to be a thing here. I know that Amazon, they had the rights this past season, so they're continuing to go further in that direction. And there's people that have been thinking for a long time, myself included, that when the NFL rights came up again in 2021 or 2022, that you could see some serious players in terms of Netflix, YouTube, Amazon. As we're getting a little closer and closer to that, and the landscape is a little more status quo than we might have thought it would be in 2018, I'm wondering if it might be too soon for that big of a jump to the next medium.
You know what? The answer to me is going to be yes and no. I don't think the NFL will ever get away from the classic broadcast, you know, the heritage broadcast networks that we know and love. But you're right, streaming and ancillary rights, yeah, that could be interesting to watch.
It could be, and something that right now is sort of occupying the landscape in a very kind of unique place, and I'm very proud of a good friend of mine for creatively spearheading this project. My good friend that I used to broadcast with at the Sports Talk Network, Ryan Ward, who has long been a writer for WWE, he has been working on and at the helm creatively, I believe, of this mixed match challenge that they're doing on Facebook every week. And they're appearing live at 10 o'clock on Tuesday nights, doing a 20-minute show right after SmackDown and doing a mixed tag team match on there, doing a little tournament for several weeks here in the winter. It's been very interesting to see what kind of a deal they've put together with Facebook as Facebook is trying to get more in the live sports slash entertainment arena, and the WWE sits right at the crossroads of that. So you've got the WWE, their contract's going to be coming up next year. UFC's contract is coming up, and it's one of these things where we know that the big boys are obviously the NFL, the NBA, to a certain extent MLB, but it's kind of interesting to me that WWE and UFC, they're sort of like the Kirk Cousins of right now, right? Like you can't go bid, you can't bid on Aaron Rodgers right now. You can't bid on Breeze or Brady, but Kirk Cousins is in the catbird seat. He's the best that's out there, and I wonder if the analogy doesn't hold up in terms of the WWE and the UFC in the next 2 years. They're going to be the biggest properties, I believe, that are on the market.
Well, it's a very, I didn't think of the Kirk Cousins analogy, but it's a very apropos one.
Thank you.
I never saw my column last week. A couple of weeks ago, I basically gave free advice to the Jets management, keep away from Kirk. And, of course, next thing I find that they cannot wait to believe the Jet beat writers. They're outbidding themselves on how much you're going to offer a guy who's never won anything. I mean, this is a great country. But the WWE and UFC, you know, to be fair, I can understand the demand here. It's if you're talking about the millennial generation, I'm a lot older than that, but that has been, I would say, boxing, what boxing was to our grandparents, that's what UFC is now to,
yes,
to millennials. And boxing's tried hard to make a comeback. They've been doing a lot better than they were, but it's still not captivating the way the UFC is. It's funny, I always said that I never was a big UFC guy because it was, to me, like the WWE, but without the humor.
Right.
And, you know, and here, getting the WWE, when you say their rights, are we talking about USA Network, or what kind of rights are up at this point?
It's going to be that, yeah, for the main shows, Raw and SmackDown, both of which are currently on USA, and one of the hot rumors that's been out there, and I think Sports Illustrated has been very much involved in the reporting on this, is supposedly Fox is coming hard on this one. They know that they may lose the UFC. They may not even mind too much if they lose the UFC because of what it costs for them. And get this, Lloyd, you're talking about a scenario where Raw goes on the mothership, Fox itself on Monday nights, and then SmackDown is on FS1 on Tuesday nights. That would be very interesting.
It's a good fit for Fox is also kind of, they know how to appeal to a younger audience. They have a sense of humor about themselves.
Yep.
It happens to be a good corporate fit. You know, I got to ask you a question, if I may. Here.
Sure.
You mentioned Sports Illustrated. You know, just passed a couple of weeks ago. I just want to make sure it was just my imagination. But does it seem that the swimsuit issue didn't quite get the buzz that it once got? You know, just, it almost was like a big yawn. I wasn't quite, you know, I was wondering if that's my perception or if that's your perception as well.
No, I have that perception, and it's a thing where when I would hear about the swimsuit things, it would almost be like, oh yeah, it's that time of year versus, again, you and I might be dating ourselves a little bit here, but you always knew what time of year it was when it was the spring suit, the swimsuit issue. And I almost wonder to whatever degree here, and maybe I'm reaching, but now that we're about 4 to 5 months into this whole hashtag Me Too thing, are there
That's
any red...
Thinking.
Are there any red faces at Sports Illustrated as far as, obviously we're going to hang on to this thing, but maybe we don't want to hype it too much? So you had the same thought, kind of? That's interesting.
That was my thought process as well. I also think that the fact that Time sold to Meredith Publications, so that Meredith is a little more conservative. Time would have the big splashy media parties, the you see your Access Hollywood, you see everybody on the red carpet. I didn't hear about anything about it in New York this year. That was always a big New York launch, and they go to Las Vegas or whatever. Nothing. Very, very muted. And I think you're right. I think the Me Too movement had a lot to do with it.
Okay. Yeah, I wondered if I was reaching there. But again, this is one of the things I like about you. You and I, we're not afraid to go out there and connect dots where other people might not see those dots being connected. So I think we may be right about that.
Yeah, I also think, I hate to say it, I think Sports Illustrated's not the big brand that it was 20 years ago. I just think there was something, when you said SI, everybody, it was even a marginal sports fan, stood up and paid attention. I don't think that buzz is there anymore.
Well, I tell you what, and I think part of it is, too, that in the era of media conglomerates, you know, 20 years ago or whatever, getting subsumed into bigger ventures and then sort of now being spun off. You know what I mean? When they were a titan in their own right before they became part of AOL Time Warner, they were something out there. But by the same token, I mean, everything we're saying about Sports Illustrated, which was a beloved brand I subscribed all throughout my youth, everything that we just said holds 10 times more true for another thing I subscribed to for a long time, the Sporting News. I mean, the Sports Illustrated is still on top of the mountain compared to the Sporting News right now.
Well, I'm going to ask another question, and I'm sure you've heard about this, the Athletic that's trying to become what SI was, but in the online, the digital world.
Yeah.
And they're signing a lot of out-of-work sports writers, which I certainly don't understand. But they've even got a few other names that could actually be employed elsewhere, like the Ken Rosenthal's, and even some people from the local news day here. Yet, I don't, for some reason, and again, I'm not wishing this, but you know, if I were the Las Vegas over-under on them, I'm giving 2 years. That's just my vibe on it. I don't know who deep-pocket these people are. It's just, I just get the feeling they're rolling the dice here and rolling it with, I think, snake eyes coming up. This is my take on it.
I don't know how the backers are going to get their money out of it, but as far as the model of getting people to pay just a couple of bucks here, the thing that's interesting to me is you mentioned out-of-work sports writers, but I know there's three instances where that wasn't the case. I believe recently, I think it's a gentleman's name is C. Trent Rosenkranz, I believe, that was the Reds beat writer for the big newspaper in Cincinnati. He left to go write for them. Jason Lloyd, who had covered the Cavs for the Akron Beacon Journal, left and went to go write for them. And Zach Mizell, who covered the Indians for the Plain Dealer, left and went to go write for them. So they're hiring away.
That's pretty good. We had a couple of Newsday people left. Mark Carrig, who covered the Mets, is now going to be covering the Yankees for the Athletic, and Arthur Staple, who covered the Islanders, nobody cares about anyway, apparently has jumped over to them as well. So you're getting names. I still have a theory, and again, I can't prove this. I don't know the gentleman who you mentioned. But I always wonder if newspapers are telling some of these people, look, we can't afford to have you on the road as much, that they call it greasing the skids. And I'm not exactly firing them, but they're almost greasing the skids, hoping that that their talent will go away and they can, you know, cut the cost once and for all.
Could very well be the case. I'm not really sure on that. And like you, I'm wondering about the economics because any kind of paywall model, I'm always suspicious because in the last 20 years, so many entities have talked about that. And again, monetization online, that's the big bugaboo, and, you know, you're talking to a guy who knows that firsthand as a proprietor.
I mean, like I said, I'm not wishing them ill, but there's so much out there that's free. Let's even see everybody had a paywall, just for argument's sake. The New York Times, Washington Post, Cleveland Plainview. If you're going to spend your money, you're going to do it on the house brands, as opposed, I mean, the National never survived as a newspaper before there was an internet. It couldn't get beat. And if ESPN couldn't make it digitally, like their ESPN New York, there may have been ESPN Cleveland, all those, basically, and folded ESPN, this has a heck of a lot of deep pockets than the Athletic does. Deep pockets, I just don't see how this is going to work.
I always joke about this, about my split personality as far as my attitude on this kind of thing. As a consumer, as a voracious consumer of whether it be sports, politics, entertainment, whatever, I love it. Oh my God, look at all the great free stuff online. And then I think to myself, wait a minute, FDH is not behind a paywall. This is not a good thing for FDH. You know, but it's like we're all cannibalizing each other. And I don't know, nobody's been able to figure out what to do about that.
Well, you know, it's funny, I've got to be purely selfish here, looking from my viewpoint, the way I'm perceived by, let's say, these teams of relations people have to credential me. You know, for years running for a weekly newspaper, I didn't get the respect of the dailies. We were always treated second-class citizens. Now a lot of the dailies are folding. Where's the weeklies are still profitable? I mean, we're out there. And we still don't have the respect for these team PR people.
Yeah.
So I have to laugh. I say, you're going to respect digital? And meanwhile, we're standing. Here's my product, pal.
Uh-huh.
It's a joke. It's absolutely. I just have to laugh.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I know that, you know, that's always something that, you know, you're focused on as far as the way that team media departments handle these kinds of things and these issues. And the one thing that I think, regardless of where anyone falls on the caste system of New York sports media, I would think that the one thing that a lot of people are going to be transfixed by this year is looking at whether you want to call it the modern day McGuire and Canseco. Yeah, I was blanking there. McGuire and Canseco. Yeah, exactly. Whether you want to go Mantle and Maris from 61, this whole thing here of having Judge and Stanton play together, and you made a joke to me off air about the injuries and everything, and obviously, again, to assume that you're getting 250-plus home run guys, I think the odds are against that, at least on a year-after-year basis. But the amount of excitement that there's going to be and the tangible kind of electricity, and oh, by the way, Gary Sanchez is in this lineup too, and a few other guys who can belt it. It's going to interject into something into baseball that we really haven't seen, again, since that steroid era.
Yeah, the guy who may actually have to do all of them is Greg Bird if he stays healthy.
Yes.
So it's definitely going to be home run city there. I was joking with friends that, gee, wouldn't it be great if Stanton could bunt somebody over and they could grab the ball at the second, get a guy over to third base, sacrifice fly, get a run at old school small ball. I mean, it would be hysterical, but the game is totally different now. I mean, I think to win the game, I still believe in small ball, but I think that's even the key anymore. People want to, as the old joke goes, chicks dig the long ball, and that's what, that's what team ticket offices want. It seems the days of productive outs and all that, this just turns on its head that the only thing counts is just offense.
That's what I want to see. I want to see Aaron Boone pick a game where he just trolls everybody by scratching out runs and playing it that way.
Hitting Rollin with Stanton and Judge, that would be great. Guy walks, they put him over to second, ground ball to the right side of the infield, and then a fly ball to get the guy in. That would be hysterical.
Like you, my sense of humor is way out there. You and I would just be falling over laughing if that happened. That would be amazing entertainment.
I might ask, we could just get a press conference. Maybe I'll ask old Aaron Boone about that. We'll think about maybe a little small ball, just have some fun.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't think that anything could make his face turn purple in a press conference, but that might be it. So go ahead, Lloyd.
I get it somewhere along the line. Ironically, the funny part is that the Yankees have always been known, for basically, big offense. And I was at a game, and it's funny. I was at a game where I think Derek Jeter had a bunch of home runs, Teixeira, whatever. But the game was decided by one run, and it was one inning where, sure enough, the Yankees got a guy in first. Guy stole second, ground ball, got him to third, and a fly ball, one run on, no hits. And I asked Girardi about that after the game, when everybody was asking all about Teixeira and Jeter and the usual stuff. And I got to say, Girardi, a guy who's not known for, and that's one of the reasons he's not the manager anymore, a guy who's not known for beaming, laughing, and goes, small ball, he was thrilled. He could have talked about that for 3 hours, how happy he was. He would have gotten a kick out of being on the conversation with us.
I think so. I think so from the way that you're setting it up there. And there's one other thing here that I had on my list of things that I wanted to bring up and get your perspective on from a sports media standpoint, and that being again, I'm in one of two areas in the country, I believe, that feels that this is a good thing. And by that, I mean the hegemony of the Cavs and the Warriors every June. Now, I think we're headed for probably number four here, unless the Rockets can do something about that in the West, particularly after the Cavs did their much-needed shakeup earlier in February. But this is one of these things where, again, even as a lifelong Cavs fan and somebody thrilled by the good fortune of this team in recent years, I'm the first to concede, you know, this is not real healthy for the rest of the league. You know, and you look at the playoffs and where it's almost the opposite of the Stanley Cup playoffs, where you may or may not get a good final, but everything leading up to it is amazing. One of these is like a funnel, one of these is like a reverse funnel, because in the NBA playoffs, nothing matters until, at minimum, the conference finals. And in the East, that usually hasn't really mattered anyways. LeBron gets through to the finals, whether he's wearing a Cavs or a Heat jersey. So from your perspective, as one of the many markets left out of this, as well as, let's face it, the media market, the capital of the world, if you will, what's your sense in watching the inevitability of what seems to be the inevitability of Cavs-Warriors 4 play out, and in what seems to be the second biggest sport right now behind the NFL, of what that dynamic means?
Well, you know, it's funny. I think that the NBA is a different animal. Now, of course, being here in New York where we are, the true mecca of basketball. Look at, you know, everybody talks about the NBA team tanking. Adam Silver made a comment. He wants to find teams that they think of tanking the games at the end of the season. And I agree with him. You should leave losing to the professionals like the Knicks and the Nets. They are the experts. And so when I go to these games, what's interesting is, yeah, of course, you have obligatory sub, although not so much for the Brooklyn Nets, who don't really have much of a home base. What you do see, and this is the key, is people want to see their stars. They want, you know, obviously when other teams come in, you'll see a lot of jerseys. Not because the fans are traveling from those cities, but, you know, every team has that one recognizable player. And that's uniforms you see. People are happy, they just want to see stars. They're not really rooting. The other way you and I think we go to a game, we're going to root for our team. More often than that, it's like watching a ballet or a symphony. You want to see certain performers. And I think that's the NBA model at this point, where people aren't so worked up if their teams don't make it as much as they want to see those stars going at each other. You know, it's kind of like the two heavyweight champs going for it. I can see where the model, the duopsony works. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, there's a case to be made for that as well, and it's funny you mentioned the Knicks and the Nets. I know that one of our longtime great regular guests on the show would vociferously disagree with me, the great Evan Roberts of WFAN in New York, him being the big Nets fan that he is. But as a Cavs fan, I say...
And he's one of the few, but Roberts will tell you,
yeah,
that's a team. When you think about the size of New York City in the area, everybody talks about this, the Knicks. New York, and I'll probably get some hate, is not a very good sports town.
Right.
And I see that with pride, having lived here. I mean, I'm from Philly, and I know where that is a great sports town. There are just too many things going on here in the entertainment industry. I think, and you know, maybe that a lot of New Yorkers think they're a little more too sophisticated, that they don't want their image of the city just on how our sports teams are doing. Look, if the Yankees win, great, to get a World Series down the Broadway, okay, fine. But if they lose, like when they lost to Houston, that wasn't a big deal. Everybody was saying, next, what's next?
Right.
It doesn't really, I guess, it doesn't stay on the psyche the way it does in other cities.
No, that's true. That's true. And the thing that I think would really make Evan's head explode, if I were to say this, which I'm going to, is viva la Nets opponents the rest of the way here. After the Kyrie Irving trade.
Said, because you get more ping pong balls out of it.
Exactly.
Right.
We're gonna get an amazing potential franchise player out of that deal. Those poor Nets. That deal with Boston.
I mean,
yeah.
The problem with the NBA is if you go through first rounds, even the Anthony Bennett, or he may have been, as we know, an exceptionally awful.
Yes.
But if you go through most of the first rounds every year, when you strip away the hype, you know, the Johnny Flynns and everybody else who we've seen come, most of those players don't make the impact. You know, they're not the LeBrons and the Steph Currys.
Well, the draft is never generally that deep. This projects to be deeper than usual, just like the 2017 one. And I guess this makes a beautiful segue to something we discussed off air, something you had brought up at a post-draft press conference a couple of years ago that got you a lot of hate mail in Canada. Who's that American guy, eh?
I'm in Toronto for that. My buddy Ed Davis.
Ed Davis. The tax implications. And you and I were talking about this off air, and you made an amazing point. that the Republican tax bill that went through, that everybody was saying, well, yes, from a political standpoint, it's designed to punish blue states, help red states. And you made the point to me that I'd like to have you amplify here, that you have the red states like Texas and Florida that are already very advantageous vis-a-vis income taxes for players, and that is something that is a magnet for them. You're starting to hear it a little bit already about Cali, with people like Phil Mickelson saying he doesn't want to live there anymore necessarily because of that kind of a thing. That is only going to be exacerbated now, and what is that going to do in the free agency market in years to come? I think you put your finger on this one brilliantly.
It's a problem for the Yankees, but especially the Mets. See, you know, the great teams like the Yankees always have that aura where they can, and they're big spenders anyway, but there's always going to be an aura. But Sandy Alderson, the Mets general manager, when I asked him that question, it was actually at the Jay Bruce press conference, he said, well, this year, you know, it's been a virus market, so it's not a real concern. But, yeah, in the long run, we're very worried. And I thought that was a very candid statement. I am like Alderson. He's a bit of a stuffed shirt, but if you ask him the right question, he'll give you a straight answer. And I think that's going to be a very big issue unless, look, taxes plus can change, and we don't know if, and, you know, this year isn't over yet, and who knows if the Democrats win and at least get one of the two houses. You don't know. Things can loosen up. Maybe they raise it a certain amount. I don't know. But it'll be interesting to see how this becomes an issue. I'll tell you what's very interesting about the tax law, which got very little attention, is that even though it was favorable to corporations, and it was not favorable to sports teams. A good example of this, the travel entertainment deduction. It used to be you could write off the cost of even a 50% of a luxury suite. Whatever it is, all right, maybe you didn't get 100% deduction, but 50% wasn't bad for entertaining clients. It is now 0%. And so you could just imagine how that's going to affect teams that are used to selling, you know, corporate suites and whatnot. That's the life, particularly minor league teams, where that, you know, having the corporate suite is key. I think this is going to have a real negative effect that we're going to see trickle down. I hate to use that term, but it is going to happen.
Oh, that's, I hadn't even thought about that part of it, too. Where I thought you were going was, I'm trying to remember who it was. I think it was Daniel Patrick Moynihan that pushed to do away with the tax-free municipal bonds for stadiums and arenas and that kind of stuff. There was talk in the early stages that it was going to be in there, and it would have kind of played into Trump's anti-NFL populism if that had happened. But in the end, the status quo wins out, and we're in a lull right now because, again, right around the turn of the century, before and after is when a lot of these new plush palaces were built, and it's been more of a trickle since then. But you get further out into the 2020s, the 2030s, we're going to have another round of this stuff here. And that bill, that was a moment in time where we could have done something about this and shifted the onus back to the private sector, away from the taxpayers, away from the corporate welfare of all the sports teams out there and the sports leagues. But the lobbying of the sports leagues wins out again.
Well, but not in this case. This is funny. With this tax bill, at least as far as corporate deductibility for season tickets, where there's no longer entertainment and meals deduction is gone.
Okay.
It's zero. It's going to hurt restaurants. It's a whole new world. Now, you can make an argument that it's long overdue, but it's still cataclysmic in terms of the economic effect on sports.
Well, that's a very good point. I guess that somewhat sort of offsets my point about the stadiums and arenas and the building of it. And in the one sense, it's beneficial that they hang on to that loophole, and in the other sense, they lose these other loopholes, and that's going to hurt them. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see how it plays out. And again, and this is one of the things we like to pride ourselves on with this show, is finding angles that people are not talking about elsewhere. And that is where, Lloyd, you are always very useful for that, because some of the things we just discussed here and the effect of the Trump tax bill on the sports world and what's going to do with sports business, you're not getting a lot of these nuances covered elsewhere. So for that, as well as for everything else you always bring to us, I thank you for that.
Rick, it's great to be back here. I got to thank Steve Cervello for arranging this, and we'll have to get one of those maybe around May when we do the upfronts. Get Simon, bring the band back together again and do a post up front story.
Absolutely. I definitely want to do that. You and Simon, as the original odd couple of the program, you guys are always great together. You guys have a chemistry on this show that, again, you wouldn't predict it in a vacuum, but somehow or another it works. It's chocolate and peanut butter, my friend. You guys make great music together.
We appreciate that, and hopefully upfront season is beginning. I may have to shoot Simon email here. So there you have it, Rick. So great being with you again.
Well, thank you. Tell him I said hi. I love Simon to death. He is a font of great wisdom on all things TV and technology, and you are a font of great wisdom and entertainment on all kinds of different subjects, my friend. Thank you for being here with us tonight to talk sports business, some of the intersections here in the sports business world recently. So thank you, Lloyd, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 962.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.